Good afternoon. At long last, we are calling this meeting of the Tax Committee to order for March 7th, 2024. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes for March 6th. Vice Chair Norris, do I have a motion?
Chair Gomez, I move adoption of the March 6th meeting minutes.
Vice Chair Norris has moved adoption of the minutes for March 6th, 2024. Is there any discussion on the motion? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, please say no. Motion prevails, and the minutes for March 6, 2024 are adopted. All right, we have one, two, three, four bills today on our agenda. First up is Chair Lissagard with House File 3769, and the Chair Lissagard is going to move that House File 3769 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Chair Lissagard, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is the most talked about bill so far to date. That was funny. You can laugh now. but it is a straightforward bill to fix the remaining issues from the 2023 tax bill. This bill moves the effective date for the net operating loss change from 2023 to 2024. The cost of the bill is $14.8 million, which is one time out of the general fund. And I would like to sincerely thank Chair Gomez and Lee Davis for understanding that this process was going to happen at some point, and we are here. So that's basically it. It's one sentence. You guys know it. We're all in support. That's it, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair Lissagard, for that presentation. Moving to member discussion, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Chair Lissagard, thank you for this bill. I guess we have to say it's a process, and this is part of the process. And I'm going to make a comment that I have absolutely no authority to do, that this thing, I'm very happy this is going to Ways and Means. We get it to the floor. I'm going to have the Republicans stand down. I have no authority to say that. But I will work on it with everything I have to get this done. This needs to be done. And I'm just very glad it's here today, and that's my commitment, and I'll give it everything I have. And any of my colleagues on this side that have issues on the House floor, we will probably have words, if you will. We'll just leave it at that. So, and so I don't have, you know, you need to stay within your authorizing environment. I'm not there right now. But I don't know of any Republicans that would, I can't speak for the entire caucus, but I don't know of anybody that would oppose this. And so I thank you for bringing it up this way. And, of course, it can be very touchy to bring anything to do with taxes to the House floor. We used to call it death by a thousand cuts. I did it very rarely, or death by a thousand amendments. And so if we can get this through, I think everybody wins on this. So thank you, Chair Lissagard. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Anybody with problems with this bill, go speak to General Davids. He'll take care of your concerns. Is there any further discussion on the bill? All right, I'm not seeing any. So with that, Chair Lissagard, do you have any final comments for us before we move to a vote?
I would just say that this is about keeping our word. We, as a body, both in the House and in the Senate, and the governor signed it, and we are just making this right, and I'm proud to stand here and do that. So appreciate your support.
Thank you so much. I realize that I didn't ask if anybody in the room wants to testify. I assume you would have stood up if you do, but before we move to a vote, just that opportunity is out there. We're good. All right. So with that, Chair Lissagard is going to renew his motion that 3769 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, please say no. Motion carries, and the bill is on its way to Ways. Thank you, Chair Lissagard. Okay. Next up, we have House File 4449 from Chair Joachim. Welcome to your committee. Chair Joachim is going to move that House File 4449 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. We kind of skipped over Tab P because he's not here, if the bill order changed a little bit. Okay. Great. Representative Tabke apparently has three bills, and so he's running around, so we'll just kind of slip him in when he gets here. No, thank you for your flexibility, Chair Joachim.
I just have to get to my notes.
Sorry, we put you on the spot a little bit with no warning, but
All right. So now if I can just get my iPad to flip so my old eyes can read this. Thank you, members. Thank you for your indulgence for giving me a minute to get to my notes here. Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing House File 449 today. This bill brings consistency and simplification to a very complex system for our landscaping and our greenhouse industries. The bill contains three provisions. The first provision makes land clearing a non-taxable service. Currently, clearing a parcel of land is non-taxable only when it is done for the first time before a development project. But if the same land is cleared again for an expansion of that project or a change, the land clearing would be considered taxable. This leads to some confusion. It can be hard to define when to consider the land cleared for the first time or a subsequent time. The current statute leaves much up to interpretation. The first section of the bill would have land clearing be a non-taxable service regardless of the timing. The second provision deals with the sales tax on detachable equipment for landscaping machinery. Detachable equipment could be a lawnmower blade or a cartridge on a weed whipper. Under the current tax code, if you purchase a piece of detachable equipment to be used on a non-taxable project, you have to pay sales tax on that part. However, if you're buying the same detachable equipment to perform a taxable service on the part that that part is then non-taxable. The provision would make the detachable equipment taxable no matter what the project is or what the machinery is used on, what project the machinery is used on. This provision would streamline tracking for sales tax for the landscaping companies by making the purchase of the detachable equipment taxable all the time. So our landscapers will have a much easier time tracking this because a lot of the times they don't have specific, you know, separate equipment they're using on different projects. The final provision is simply an update to the tax code to include new technology in greenhouse ventilation systems. This new technology has ventilation systems as part of a roof construction versus something that is a separate piece of machinery. And I know you also have a fiscal note in your folder, which we just received late yesterday. And I've briefly talked with the landscapers that brought the bill forward to me, and they have some questions on some of the details and how things are defined, and we'll be working further with the folks that put the fiscal note together to get some more clarification, because land clearing and tree removal are different things. So with that, I have today two folks from the industry that can explain this much more than I can and much better than I can. And I will have them come up in whatever order Madam Chair would like to call them.
Thank you very much, Chair Joachim. So moving now to testifiers. First up on my list is Matt Kuha. And then Scott Frampton is on deck after that. Welcome to the committee. Thank you so much for being here. Just be sure to say your name as you go ahead with your testimony, if you don't mind.
Thank you for having me. My name is Matt Kuha. I am the business development director with a company called Irrigation by Design out of Minneapolis. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today and get into the details of 4449. As a long-time landscape and irrigation contractor, I believe it's crucial to address the positive implications and impact of House File 4449 on our businesses. One of the provisions of the bill aims to remove inclusion and record-keeping challenges, confusion and record-keeping challenges. Pardon me.
You're good.
Not as young as I used to be. One of the provisions aims to remove confusion and record-keeping challenges regarding sales and use taxes levied upon detachable landscaping equipment. Landscaping and irrigation contractors like Irrigation by Design pay sales tax whenever the equipment is purchased and to perform a non-taxable service. However, the same purchase is considered tax-exempt if it is being purchased on a taxable service. We cannot afford to buy two entirely different sets of equipment for one taxable service and a separate one for non-taxable services. This leads to time and energy being spent tracking and documenting how and when each of these detachable accessories are used so that we can then calculate the percentage of sales tax that is owed. It's a challenge and a nightmare for our accounting and our operational administration. House File 4449 adds clarity to the tax code by making all purchases of this equipment subject to sales tax so that the contractor does not need to track the use of that equipment in taxable or non-taxable activities. It's also important to note that most contractors have been paying sales tax whenever we are purchasing this equipment because we figure that it's easier to pay the tax and hope that we don't get in any trouble with the state. I appreciate the opportunity to provide this information, this background, and to testify before this committee today. I would urge you to support clarifying this bit of our tax code by supporting this bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Kuha. Scott Frampton. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and fellow committee members. I am Scott Frampton. I brought along with me today, and I encourage all of you to read this on your spare time. It's the Lawn and Garden Maintenance Trees and Shrub fact sheet on sales tax for the services that we provide. Something interesting about our businesses that's very different than retailers is that no matter where we're performing the service, we're collecting tax, sales tax, based on how that sales tax, based on that zip code or that municipality is. So that's one of the factors that's very difficult in this whole package of this discussion. I'm a business owner as well, specializing in building and maintaining landscapes in Minnesota. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. I am here today to urge the committee to pass House File 4449 to provide clarity in Minnesota sales and use tax related to landscape, irrigation, and greenhouse. As I was mentioning, the vast majority of our businesses are small businesses with limited use or access to full-time accountants and bookkeepers or sophisticated knowledge of accounting software. Our businesses work outdoors on properties throughout the Twin Cities and spend a small percentage of their time performing office and administrative work in order to make a living. Determining what services and equipment and materials and labor require either use or sales tax and which are taxable and non-taxable is exceptionally complex and time-consuming. The lack of simplicity and clarity has resulted in many members experiencing burdensome and time-consuming sales tax audits. And the reason this is important to clarify a little bit further is that, like Matt's business, our business, we perform many of these different services. So one day we might be working on a new construction property, building a non-taxable service, while at the same time we'll have a different crew working on a property that's already been built and you're living in for 3 or 4 years, and we're performing maintenance services that are non-taxable, that are taxable. Those services are taxable after the fact. So the products and the equipment and so forth on those two different services are treated differently. And we understand why. We understand, we get that part. And as Matt had suggested, paying tax, the use tax on all of the detachable parts and pieces makes sense. The vendors get it, the contractors get it, we don't have to use an ST3 form to get the deduction, and most of the people are already playing that. We just want it clarified in the tax, because when our members are reading this fact sheet, they get just completely glazed over as, well, how come it's this and how come it's that? So that's one of the reasons we're asking for that. On the land clearing Chair Joaquim was talking about, there again, it's very confusing to understand what land clearing is. And I think what we were seeing in the, I forget what you called it, the
revenue note. Revenue note.
The revenue note. In the revenue note, that probably includes every single tree that is a taxable removal versus what might be done to do an addition or an improvement, like a swimming pool or an addition to a home or an additional building on a property, I suspect. But as you all know, building improvements and the construction related to an improvement or improvement to real property are non-taxable. So it's illogical that this one piece of it would also be non-taxable. And I think that's an area where people get hung up, small businesses get hung up, because they mistakenly don't charge the sales tax on that piece. And then when we have these burdensome sales tax audits, we get caught up in, well, you needed to charge tax for that. Well, how come? You know, it gets confusing. Lastly, the greenhouse equipment. So the greenhouse ventilation equipment, in this case, we're simply correcting a mistake. greenhouse equipment has always been tax exempt, and we're simply wanting to make sure that new technology is included in the tax code. And just I think it's just a minor oversight. So that's for growing, obviously, greenhouse, any greenhouse type of crops, whether it be food or nursery, flowers, etc. Thank you. I hope I was clear.
Thank you very much, Mr. Frampton. All right. Is there anybody else present who wishes to testify on this bill? Not seeing any. I will turn to member discussion. First, Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a general question, maybe to the bill author or whoever might be the best person to answer this. But, you know, from a perspective of simplifying the tax code and cost, has there been any research to simply just get rid of the sales tax on all of the style of equipment across industry or the service, just from a standpoint of lessening the cost of construction, lessening the cost to building things, landscaping, and the rest? Has there been a fiscal note pulled or anything like that, just to see kind of where that would set the budget? And because if we're going to simplify things, I would rather we just get rid of all the sales tax in this particular area rather than kind of re-up it in a certain way or whatever. So,
Chair Joachim? Sure.
Thank you, Representative Zinski. I'm not sure what you mean by this area. You mean sales tax across all industries? Because we're just focusing on the landscaping industry in this one piece, and they've actually said, you know, just have us pay sales tax on the detachable equipment. Mm-hmm. It just makes sense. But, you know, wanted to change that, and we were hoping the fiscal, that revenue note showed that that was an offset with, like, well, then don't tax us on the land clearing piece, because that was some confusion too. So they're trying to make this cost neutral, but with the fiscal, with the revenue note coming back, it doesn't seem to be that way. So that's why we're glad that you're laying it over, so we can have some more discussion around that. But this is just, we're just working on the landscapers right now.
Sounds good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good. Okay. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Joachim, for bringing this bill forward. This is a very important bill. I think hope we can get this done this year. I was a bit taken aback on the revenue estimate. I think it's a little higher than it might really be, but we'll see what happens there. To one of Mr. Kuha's comments, he made the statement that sometimes they just pay the extra tax so they don't get in trouble with the state. I think if you're giving the state of Minnesota more money, I don't think you're going to get any trouble at all. I wouldn't think, but just to that point. So, and real quick, Madam Chair, just maybe a nod from Ms. Bears. Does the department support this or have a position? No position. Boy, they're tough trying to nail. But anyways, Chair Joachim, I really think this is a good bill. I think we need to move forward with it. And I will say this for the department, that I think it's going to make things so much easier for the department and for the landscapers to clear this up. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This isn't the only type of tax clarification we need. There's other examples. To the other representative's point here, I know this happens quite a bit in agriculture and some of the logging and so forth. But I guess my concern, since we like conversations in this committee, is, you know, when we have agreement on both sides here, with bills, the last one, maybe this one, how we always lump these into omnibus bills. And I would really like to see maybe a change of how we do business here. If we have bipartisan support on these bills and they're good for the people in our state, maybe what we need to have is, instead of lumping them into omnibus bills, let's put them forward in single line item bills like our Constitution says we're supposed to do. Maybe instead of the friction that's caused by some of these things, we could actually come to some agreement on bills and move forward and serve the people of our state a lot better. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Weiner. Would just note that the Representative Lissagard's bill that we just did pass that to Ways and Means. And as Lee Davids was talking about, you know, it gets a little complex when you send tax bills out as the House, because then we sort of lose or it just opens up possibilities. So, but I definitely hear what you're saying about, you know, wanting to send single bills forward. And I think, you know, we'll be voting on some single bills on the House floor today. And I was pleased to see that we did more of that last year than I had seen in my previous couple terms. So thank you for that. Next up, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Iwakim, for bringing this bill. I have to say, when the landscapers met with me, I have several in my district, and they came in and talked to me about this. This is the first time in my life people have said, this is so complicated, we would rather have pay the tax on everything than have to do the record keeping. Like, that's how crazy the current system is. Like, people saying, we would rather pay more taxes than deal with this requirement. I was stunned. So appreciate that you are working on this. The question I have isn't real. I think I understand that part of the bill very well. The question I have is on the part in subdivision 2 about the materials consumed in agriculture production. I'm just wondering, like, where is this used, where they need venting panels installed on the roof? So could you give some examples of this? Is this in, I'm assuming these are already needed in barns and, you know, a lot of ag situations. So why is this important right now? Thank you.
Thank you. So you're talking section 3, subdivision 2 on page 6? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Chair Joachim.
Yes.
And so, you can also call our nonpartisan staff.
Yeah. I can start, and then I'll pass it to them. So,
okay, cool.
One of the testifiers brought up the guides, right, to the taxable, what you have to have taxable and non-taxable. And what you're referring to in the statute is under the nursery and greenhouse production, so it's just about nurseries. And the ventilation systems have always been non-taxable because it's helping ventilate and produce a taxable product. But there's new technology that's coming out that is part of a roof, and sometimes things that are part of something or part of a roof, like if you have an HVAC system, are treated differently. And this is just to update our codes to the technologies that's out there, that some of these new ventilation systems in the nursery, in the greenhouses, are actually part of the roof construction. So that's that clarification there. But I can get some more examples if you want to have either nonpartisan staff or one of our experts come down too.
Representative Robbins, what do you think?
I think that's helpful. I was, you know, I don't know anything about greenhouse construction, so that makes it more understandable. Thank you.
It's amazing what we get to know on this trip.
Great. Thank you. Is there any further member discussion? Not seeing any. Chair Joachim, any final words about your bill?
Yes. And one, I want to thank everybody for the conversation and the discussion, especially around sending single bills to the floor. And the tax bill will be a single item bill. It's a tax bill. But sometimes the thought of sending all bills to the floor will then lead us again to, do we want to be a full-time legislature? Because there would be a lot of things that we'd have to send. Every 2 years, we set a whole budget. Education, finance, we set it 38% of the budget last year in one committee hearing, or not one committee hearing, multiple committee hearings in a larger bill. And sometimes that's just the way we do business, because there's also 134 of us that each have our own election certificates, and sometimes we all like to talk a lot. So that's part of the concept of that. But this really is a way to streamline some of the complicated part of our tax code. There's also ways we can level set the playing field. I have another bill where if you own a nonprofit daycare and you own the building, you get a property tax break. But if you rent the building as a nonprofit daycare, there's no avenue for that. So there's all those different things we can look at to either level playing field or streamline things. And that's what's so great about this committee and Chair Gomez allowing us to sit and talk about this, especially since we probably should have waited for the fiscal note to come out so we could go back and forth and not have have the full picture in front of us why we came to the committee. So I am sorry about that, and we'll continue to work on the bill and have the industry experts work with the fiscal note staff. It kind of says on the fiscal note staff that industry experts were talked to, but I can't find one that was talked to. So I think there's some discussion around what is the definition of land clearing when it comes to the revenue note. Sorry, I have fiscal note in my head from committee this morning. So this bill's still going to be worked on as it gets laid over, and I really do appreciate your time and attention. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. And as the Chair said, we're going to continue to work on this and figure out some of these issues with the department. So with that, Chair Joachim is going to renew her motion that House File 4449 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill, and it is laid over. Thank you, Chair Joachim. I believe we have Representative Tabke, or maybe we lost him again. Did we? Okay. Chair Joachim's going to go fetch Representative Tabke. Oh, no, you're not. Okay, well, you're not in charge of Rep. Tabke. We're good. Maybe I should just go up and, I don't know. No? Okay. We made you wait at the beginning. We're having an interlude, intermission. Well, let's see. Let me see how many attorneys from the department are signed up to test. In a second, we'll probably go that direction and just make Tabke wait for the five attorneys from the department to go through line by line. I know. It's exciting.
My name is Dave, and I like bonding.
Okay. So I shouldn't go up? Okay. The intermission continues. We will entertain jokes if anybody has one. Yeah, I know. Oh, hi, Representative Tabke, welcome. Give you a second to gather your thoughts here. Okay. Catch your breath. Welcome. I understand you've been running around this afternoon, so we're happy to get a little bit of your time. So we're you're presenting House File 4463, and I'm going to move that House File 4463 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. Representative Tabke, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the time. Sorry for being tardy. We had an ag vote that I needed to be at, so... this is a housing tax credit extension of the funds that are available this past year. And so a House File is a simple bill. It rolls over the unused tax credits that have been previously allocated by the state to be used into the future. So the housing MHFA has previously been working on this bill, and so they had it implementing this bill from when it was passed last in 2021, I believe. And so with that, we have about $5 million in extra funds that have not yet been used. And so the department was a little slower than we would have loved for it getting started up and used. So they started implementing the program October 4th of 2023, and they closed it on December 13th of 2023. And so what we're asking is that the funds continue to move forward into the future and that we are being able to roll those over.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Tabke. So we have a couple of testifiers on the list. Up first is Mary Tingerthal. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name. Thanks for being here. Please just introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Mary Tingerthal. Some of you know that I served as Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency from 2011 to 2019. Good to see many of you again. I live in St. Paul, and I'm here today on behalf of myself regarding this bill introduced by Representative Tabke. Since 2019, I've continued to work in the field of affordable housing as a volunteer and sometimes as a consultant. And I ended up picking up the torch and working on this issue last fall as the program rolled out. This bill is about the state housing contribution credit. It's actually an idea that came to me and to the agency when I was still commissioner. And I have to say I liked the idea from the very beginning, because it is a way that individuals from across the state, as well as corporations, can actually contribute dollars to affordable housing and workforce housing projects that they care about in their communities. And I think it builds kind of a psychic commitment to affordable housing that we don't get necessarily when dollars come through directly through the agency, but this is a personal kind of commitment. One of the factors about this program is that contributors, whether they be individuals or corporations, are allowed to designate a specific project that they would like their dollars to go to. And it's interesting that of the dollars that were contributed in 2023, which was the first year of the program, almost 75% of those dollars went to designated projects. So they're projects that people personally cared about. I do have to disclose that I was a contributor in 2023 and picked a project that's about a half mile from my house because I think it's a really important one. There were 23 designated projects that received contributions in 2023. As Representative Tabke mentioned, there were some delays in getting the program set up, really launched while we're still in the depths of the pandemic, lots of housing programs, lots of other implementation happening last year. So the program was really available for only about 60 days. I worked with the Minnesota Housing Partnership and other organizations to get the word out to both potential donors and to developers that might have projects that could benefit from a designated contribution. We held webinars. Minnesota Housing Partnership stood up a web page where developers could list projects. And you might be interested to know that those projects ranged from some single-family houses in greater Minnesota being developed by Habitat for Humanity chapters to some major projects in the Twin Cities area, a really wide range appealing to a lot of different types of potential contributors. We also, many of the nonprofit developers did outreach to specific potential donors from their normal donor group. In the short window, we were able to attract almost $7 million in contributions out of $11.6 million that could have been contributed. So, as Representative Tabke mentioned, it's about $4.7 million that we would leave on the table if this extension were not passed. The fiscal note or the revenue note that came out with this indicates that the recent revenue forecast did already assume that the entire $9.9 million in credits would be expended, so they estimated that there would be a zero impact in the revenue note. Asking today to amend the statute to allow these unused credits to be available for use in 2024. I'm personally quite confident that these dollars will be used up this year, as there are already $1.3 million in contributions in the till already in 2024. So appreciate your consideration and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Ms. Tingerthal. Up next, Libby Murphy. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Murphy.
Thank you. My name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at the Minnesota Housing Partnership. Minnesota Housing Partnership, we provide direct technical assistance to rural and tribal communities. We're rooted here in the state of Minnesota, but we do that work nationally as well. We produce original research on housing trends here in the state, and then we advance policy solutions at the state and federal level. Years ago, a broad coalition came together, and this body agreed that the state housing tax credit was an important program to support new development. At the time, the program was the legislature's largest new ongoing investment in affordable housing in over a decade. Today, it seems small compared to the investments that were made last year, but every dollar is needed. We have a deficit for our lowest income households of over 106,000 units. And it's impacting every county in the state. So we cannot leave these dollars on the table. MHP's most recent State of the State of Housing report is being released this week. All indicators are getting worse. Housing cost burden is worse. More than half of renters are now experiencing housing cost burden in the state of Minnesota. Disparities in homeownership are worse. So I urge you not to leave these resources on the table. I, like the previous testifier, am confident that had the program guide been released earlier and the state had begun taking contributions, the program would have been fully subscribed. Even in the final days of accepting contributions, new projects who are asking MHP, we hosted this website to help facilitate projects and contributors. We were getting new projects added to the website up until the final days of before December 13th. And we also know that Minnesota Housing was accepting contributions up until the last moment. Contributions were being made up until the deadline. So I just am confident that this is going to be a successful program. It is a successful program. We know that Minnesotans are interested. We just didn't have the time in 2023 to make sure that all of those resources were able to go to projects statewide.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murphy. Excuse me. All right. Moving now to member discussion. Is there any discussion on this bill? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe to the author, maybe a nonpartisan staff here. If I understand this correctly, and I could be wrong on this, but if I understand this correctly, you have a project, you can make a contribution, get a very nice tax credit, right? Credit.
Yes.
Tax credit, okay. Well, what would happen if I had a project, because you can designate where it goes. Let's say I had a project for me, and I wanted to put a bunch of money in, could I designate it to my project, Madam Chair?
Representative Tapke, and if you want to, you can go to nonpartisan if needed.
No, I don't need, Madam Chair and Representative Davis, no, you cannot contribute to your own project via this program.
Representative Davis.
Bummer.
I know, sorry to make the point. Representative Davis is always looking out for a sweet tax credit to offset that liability that he has, the state of Minnesota. Any further discussion? Representative Joy.
One question, Representative Tapke. If you would have missed the agriculture and came here, would we have won that vote?
Representative Tapke.
No.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Robbins. Thank Is you. This another joke? Are we?
No.
It's Representative
sorry,
Robbins.
I am
We're
going to
get serious
funny.
Here. Get
I'm
ready,
sorry.
Tapke. Okay, Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this bill. I just want to make sure I'm understanding it. So how much of the $9.9 million has been, you know, requested or used this cycle?
Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair and Representative Robbins, so there has been $1.1 million for the current cycle that we're in today has been requested of the $9.9 million. So that hasn't, I'll use a different word. $1.1 million has been applied for at this point and has not, but Minnesota Housing is very confident that because it just reopened again, and so they are very confident that the full 9.9 will be utilized this year.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the 1.1 that was subscribed for 2023 was out of 9.9 for 2023 or no?
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Robbins. So 2023, it was $5.8 million. 2024 has already been $1.1 million. I don't know which year you're asking about, but the current year that we're in is $1.1
Right. So what you were saying was that the period in 2023, the application period, because it was really long delayed, was only open for, it sounded like 6 weeks, 7 weeks. And so during that time, the full amount wasn't subscribed to, but it was probably because of that delayed opening of the application period. And so what you're asking for is that we roll those dollars that weren't allocated last year due to the short application time forward to this year. And so that ultimately you would be adding those to the 9.9 that's allocated for 2024, I believe. Representative Robbins.
Thank you. So my understanding is 5.8 from last year of the 9.9, and you want to roll forward the extra. And then this year's period is just starting, and it looks like it's good, so it could use up all the 9.9. Mm-hmm. But are you asking that just last year's roll forward, or everything that's not used up in every year until it expires rolls?
Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair and Representative Robbins, just what was not used last year rolls.
Got
Representative
it.
Robbins.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. I would support that. I didn't want it to be an ongoing role every year because we are in a deficit situation, and if money can go back to the general fund, that might be better allocated in other uses. So I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. And hopefully all the dollars that are supposed to go for affordable housing will go for that, because as we all know, we need them across the state. So Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think my reading was correct on being able to designate your own project. Maybe Mr. Klayman could clarify.
Mr. Klayman?
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, yeah, there's nothing in the law that would prohibit a person from designating the funds to their own project. The question would be whether under 462A40 subdivision 3, whether an individual could get a grant. It looks like an individual could, or a taxpayer could always get a loan. The question is, could they get a grant? And there are some restrictions that exist there. The potentially those restrictions would not apply in every single instance. I guess I would also point out that whether the law allows this is sort of different than whether, you know, an agency administers it in that particular way, considering that the grant and loan administration is discretionary. And so for some of those, for instance, for the, you know, the two taxable year waiting period, I think there's a 24-month a project timeline that the agency has for that. So it may be administratively difficult, if not impossible, you know, under that provision to do that. But there may be other, you know, ownership thresholds that, you know, what could potentially allow for a grant to be provided to, you know, a taxpayer who's designated that as their project. So.
And I know Ms. Tingerthal stepped up, but Representative Davids, did you want to?
Well, yes, Madam Chair. All I can say is, after that explanation, there's still hope.
Ms. Tingerthal, did you have anything to add additionally?
I did want to comment that there is language that says a taxpayer is prohibited from contributing to certain projects as provided in section 462A.40. So it's actually in the statute of the agency that is included. And I can tell you from having seen the application form, this is a fairly detailed and complex certification process that the contributor must go through in demonstrating that they do not have an ownership interest in the property. I know that was a concern of the committee at the time that this bill was being considered, that they're not, you know, that it not be a way for developers to basically support their own projects and be able to get that those dollars back twice. So
thank you, Ms. Tingerthal. Thank you, Representative Davids. We were sort of lamenting. We're like, oh, we don't have Minnesota Housing here, but we have an emeritus commissioner, so we're very happy that you were able to clear that up for us. Thank you. And back to Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And perhaps Nonpartisan could take a look at this too, but to your point that it's only rolling over from 1 year, in line 1.13, it says any remaining amount is available for allocation for the following taxable years until the entire allocation has been made. So I'm not sure it's limited. Could someone clarify that for me?
Mr. Klayman?
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, yes. So for each taxable year, if the $9.9 million is not allocated, then whatever balance is left for a taxable year would then roll over to the next year. So the whatever sort of excess there is in each year would go to another year. So it's not limited to just one single taxable year, the rollover amount, under the current language.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. So my original understanding was correct. So then I'm less supportive, honestly. I don't mind limiting it because there was a tough rollout, but I don't know that we just want to do a blanket rolling it over every year, personally. So thank you, members.
And we are laying this bill over, so, I mean, I'm kind of with you, so we'll keep working on it if we end up putting this in a budget bill eventually or in a overall tax bill eventually. Representative Tabke, did you have anything? Or
no, I was just going to agree with you. Is that I'm very willing to work with you on,
okay,
on figuring these things out.
Great. All right. Is there any further member discussion? Not seeing any. Representative Tabke, any closing thoughts?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. I apologize for coming in hot on this one. it's been a day. So with that, this is just a really, really great program that helps to get affordable housing where we need it and to allow the ability for folks to invest in affordable housing in their local area. It's a really great program that is helping to build a lot of housing that is necessary across the state. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Tabke. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 4463 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. And it is laid over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. While Chair Gomez is working her way up there, Chair Gomez moves that House File 4302 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. Chair Gomez, any introductory remarks before we get to your testifiers?
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to be presenting House File 4302, the Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Bill. That completes my knowledge about the policy and technical bill, and with that, I will pass it back to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I see first on our list of testifiers today, we have Joanna Bears. Ms. Bears, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. We appreciate the opportunity to present the department's policy and technical bill, and thank you to Chair Gomez for authoring it today. And in case anyone is wondering, we do support this bill, just as a position.
We're going to catch up.
As you may recall from the Commissioner Markford's presentation in earlier February, when a tax bill is passed and signed by the governor, the department gets ready and starts implementing that tax bill right away. And throughout this process, we do updating our tax forms and instructions, we publish guidance, and we engage with stakeholders and other folks. And during this time, the department or taxpayers or tax professionals may notice items that may need to be clarified or updated. And some of these items may seem small, but they're important to ensure we are providing customers with the information, education, and services they need to efficiently navigate Minnesota's tax obligations and opportunities. These are the items that make up the department's policy and technical bill. And throughout session, we did do extensive stakeholder outreach on some of these items, including sharing language to ensure folks directly or indirectly involved are aware and understand the impact of this bill. We'll continue to engage with folks throughout session, so if there's questions, please let me know. I do want to acknowledge, and we do understand, that if there's an issue or an item that has questions, that it does get removed from the policy and technical bill before it goes forward. So we do appreciate the opportunity to work through those items throughout session, but do realize that if it can't be resolved, that we will remove it and work on it throughout session or throughout the summer and hopes for next year. With that, I will turn it over to our first testifier, Ms. Reisdorf.
All right. As an attorney myself, my heart is warm to see this army of lawyers behind you there. And first up, as Ms. Bear said, is Margaret Reisdorf. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. Let me get my notes here for a second. Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Margaret Reisdorf, and I'm a staff attorney at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'm going to be summarizing all of Article 1 relating to individual income taxes and the corporate franchise tax. So the first section amends the film production credit, the portion of that credit, to provide a 12 consecutive month time frame as opposed to a calendar year time frame, so that it is consistent with the rest of the credit, specifically the time frame and the definition portion of that statute. Next, Sections 2, 5, and 10 are all related to the delayed business interest subtraction. Section 2 amends the income definition for flow-through entities to allow for the subtraction for delayed business interest. Section 5 amends the corporate franchise related addition to correctly cross-reference the addition for the subtraction. And then Section 10 amends the temporary additions and subtractions that were enacted last session to also account for the delayed business interest subtraction. And I should mention that, Section 2 is effective retroactively to December taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2022. Section 5 is effective back to the same period when the interest addition and subtraction were added to the statutes, and Section 10 is effective at the same time those changes that were enacted temporarily were effective for federal purposes. Okay. There's one other change in Section 2, specifically on lines 3.2 and 3.22. This change removes obsolete flow-through allocation rules that were repealed last session. So those are being removed because there are new allocation rules under the statute. That is effective also retroactively to that repeal for taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2022. Section 3 amends our Social Security subtraction. The Social Security subtraction was amended last session to allow taxpayers the greater of two subtractions, one's calculated on the simplified method or the alternative method. The changes that are put in place here just simply correct reference errors. So specifically on lines 4.13, 4.16, and 4.19, we correct the reference from paragraph C to paragraph E so that it properly relates to the alternate method. And then similarly, there's a change to the reference for the phase-out threshold for the simplified method on lines 4.26 and 4.27. Again, these changes are made retroactive to when the changes last session were made. The fourth section relates to the new qualified retirement benefit subtraction. And this makes a technical change that makes it clear that qualified public pension income means only public pension amounts received by either a member or a survivor of a plan when the pension or the work was based on service for which they did not also earn Social Security benefits. This section is a technical change and is effective day following final enactment. Sections 6, 7, and 8 all make technical changes to the renter's credit that was moved from 290 cap A into our income tax statutes last session. Section 6 first amends the definition section of the renter's credit to make it clear that an individual will be considered a dependent only if, for the purposes of the credit, only if they meet the definition of a dependent under sections 151 and 152 of the Internal Revenue Code and are actually claimed as a dependent by the taxpayer seeking the credit. Section 7, the second change, amends the nursing home intermediate care and long-term care facility rent provisions to remove obsolete language, a portion of a sentence that used to relate to household income. Last session, the renter's credit changed from using a household income definition to adjusted gross income, so this sentence no longer makes sense. Adjusted gross income already doesn't include these amounts. And then finally, Section 8, the third change, relates to the one claimant per household requirement for the credit. It provides clarifying language that married couples filing a joint return or married couples filing separately may claim the credit on the total amount both spouses' gross rent. And all of those sections are effective retroactive to the enactment. And then I believe finally Section 9 amends the short line railroad infrastructure modernization credit to clarify the credit calculation. This amendment is effective retroactively to the same time the credit became effective, which is for taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2022. And that concludes Article 1.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Kenzie Gerber-Lord. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Kenzie Gerber-Lord. I'm an attorney with the department, and today I'm going to be summarizing Article 2 of the bill, which covers the sales and use tax modification. There are two sections in this article, and both deal with marketplace provider liability relief. But first, we're going to begin with just a little bit of background. Marketplace providers are entities that operate by listing items for sale from a variety of marketplace sellers and facilitating the completion of any sales that occur. Marketplace providers are considered the retailers for all the sales that they facilitate, and as such, they're required to collect and remit sales tax on behalf of the marketplace sellers who operate under them. This proposal deals with situations when a marketplace provider may seek relief from liability for collecting an incorrect amount of sales tax. Section 1 of this bill removes the marketplace provider liability relief language from where it currently exists in Minnesota Statutes 297A.66 Subdivision 3. And then Section 2 of this article creates a new subdivision that deals exclusively with marketplace provider liability relief and provides clarity on the standard that applies. Specifically, to receive liability relief, a marketplace provider has to show that a marketplace seller provided them with erroneous information that prevented the marketplace provider from being able to collect the correct amount of sales tax. Both of these sections will be effective for sales and purchases made after June 30th of 2024. And that concludes Article 2.
Thank you. Next up, we have Peter Hendricks. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Peter Hendricks. I'm an attorney at the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I'll be summarizing sections in Article 3 related to property taxes and local government aids. The first section relates to Class 1B property. First, a brief background on Class 1B property. Class 1B has a lower classification rate of 0.45% on the first $50,000 of market value for homesteads owned by persons who are blind or permanently and totally disabled, or certain surviving spouses of veterans who were permanently and totally disabled. Last session, qualifying low-income property, previously referred to as Class 4D property, was expanded to add a new Class 4D2 of owner-occupied community land trust property that is an affordable housing option for low-income families. This amendment adds Class 4D2 within Class 1B, allowing such owners to qualify for the lower 4D2 rate on any market value in excess of the $50,000. And this is effective for assessment year 2025. The second section relates to tax reduction or abatement applications. Last session, Minnesota's homestead application statute was amended to allow an owner to use their individual income tax identification number, or ITIN, on an application for a homestead classification. Prior law only allowed homestead status if the owner had a Social Security number. The change in Section 2 before you would allow property owners with an ITIN to make an application to a county board for the reduction or abatement of estimated market value or taxes. The county board does have discretion to grant a reduction or abatement that it deems just and equitable, only for taxes payable in the current year, or with some exceptions, the prior 2 years. Abatements can occur when a property is erroneously classified as non-homestead. This change also allows, also provides for the ITIN, like the Social Security number, to be classified as private data under Minnesota Data Practices statutes. And this is effective for abatement applications filed in 2023 and thereafter. The final section of Article 3, Section 3, is related to local affordable housing aid, and it's a timing fix. Last session, as you know, a new aid program for local affordable housing was enacted and funded with a new metropolitan sales tax and use tax. Aid is paid to the 7 metropolitan counties, and there are currently 63 Tier 1 cities with a population over 10,000. This proposal restructures the payment schedule for this aid program to better align with other state aid programs. This change makes no changes to how the aid is calculated or the aid amounts. Under this change, the Commissioner of Management and Budget is to certify to the Commissioner of Revenue by July 15th the tax collection balances as of the preceding June 1st. Then on or before September 1, the Commissioner of Revenue will certify the aid amounts to be paid on October 1 to the cities and counties. Unneeded language is deleted from this section as well, and it's effective for aids payable in 2024. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Lastly, we have Jim Jordan. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Jordan, another attorney from the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I'll be summarizing the final article, Article 4, of the Policy Technical Bill. So first we'll start with Section 1, which does two things. First, it clarifies when a contested case commences before the Office of Administrative Hearings when a tax preparer challenges an order issued for improper tax return preparation practices. Second, it lengthens timelines for the parties and the Office of Administrative Hearings to act in a contested case proceeding regarding a cease and desist order and or an administrative penalty issued to a tax preparer. The section is effective for penalties assessed and orders issued after the day following final enactment. Section 2 on page 20 removes the first of two estate informational return requirements. Currently, within approximately 3 years of a descendant's death, qualified heirs who claim the qualified farm property or qualified small business property deduction for estate tax must file two estate informational returns proving the property still qualifies for the deduction. Otherwise, the qualified heir owns a recapture tax. The first return is due between 24 and 26 months from the descendant's death, and the second return is due between 36 and 39 months from the descendant's death. This proposal removes the first return requirement since revenue determined it is unnecessary and duplicative. This amendment is effective the day following final enactment. Section 3 on page 21 eliminates the requirement that lawful gambling taxpayers create and file an annual cash count report at the end of the taxpayer's fiscal year. The cash count is not helpful to the department for compliance purposes and is no longer used by the Gambling Control Board. The cash count requirement also imposes an unnecessary time and financial burden on taxpayers. As a result, the department proposes eliminating the cash count requirement. And this amendment is effective July 1, 2024. Section 4 on page 22 corrects the insurance premium tax component of 2023 legislation that extended the state's film production tax credit. The film production credit gives film producers the opportunity to use their Minnesota film expenses to receive an assignable credit against state income tax or state insurance premium tax. While the film production tax credit was extended by the 2023 legislature for income tax owed, the legislature neglected to similarly extend the credit for insurance premium tax owed. This amendment realigns the credit against insurance premium tax with the credit against income tax so that both continue to expire at the same time, in this case, at the end of 2030. This amendment is effective the day following final enactment. The final section, Section 5, also on page 22, corrects an uncodified session law from the 2023 session. The 2023 session law provides additional time for certain filers to amend their returns for Minnesota's federal conformity. The session law incorrectly references Chapter 289 instead of the correct reference, which is Chapter 289A. Section 5 fixes that. This is effective retroactively to when it was effective under the session law for federal purposes. And that concludes the department's policy and technical bill.
Thank you. And I believe Ms. Bears has some additional comments she wanted to add. Ms. Bears, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I just really wanted to say thank you to your staff. We really appreciate the knowledge and expertise that they have and enjoy our relationship. I think they're very valuable, and that's to the nonpartisan staff and the partisan staff. We just appreciate that relationship and wanted to say thank you.
Thank you. Any members of the public who have any deep thoughts on the DOR policy and technical bill? Seeing none, how about any members who have deep thoughts they'd like to share? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. This is for the property tax area. On 16.23, it just adds the individual taxpayer identification number as was described, but can you just give a little more explanation as a supposed to be a technical clarification, and then it talked about the data privacy. Where's the data privacy part on that?
Ms. Paris.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the data practices on the bottom of page 15. But I can talk a little bit more about the I-10 issue. What happens is when we made all the updates last year, and actually it was, we were proposed it in the governor's bill, we missed this piece of it. And this is just allowing an abatement for homestead or property taxes. So we're just trying to align it so that they can still receive the same benefit as if they were had a Social Security number.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so the adding the individual, the I-10 part was in other parts of the law that was passed last year and omitted in these sections?
Ms. Bears.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Other member questions or comments? All right, seeing none, any final comments? Chair Gomez.
I just realize as I'm sitting here that I've reached the point in my tax career where I actually understood everything that they talked about, which was first time. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, members of the committee.
And with that, Chair Gomez renews her motion that House File 4302 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2024 tax bill. House File 4302 is laid over. Next week, we will continue hearing bills as well as we're going to get an update on the new tax incident study on Tuesday. Chair Gomez, any other comments you want to make before we adjourn? All right. With that, thanks, everybody. The Taxes Committee stands adjourned.